In this episode, I speak with high performance expert Dr. Jenny Susser, a self-described athlete, scientist, horse lover, and people expert. She helps people with high performance, but today I'm going to ask her about embracing contentedness with low performance and what that even means. This talk will get personal as I'll share some challenges I've been having at this point in my life. So here we go, episode 250, Low Performance with Dr. Jenny Susser. Hi, I'm Karen Rolfe, and welcome to Horse Training in Harmony. This podcast is about you making progress with your horse in a way that you both can love. It's about learning how to move and be in harmony. Because yes, you really can develop a horse to be both athletic and happy. When we show up as our best selves for our horses will show up for us. So, let's get started. Dr. Jenny Susser has a doctoral degree in clinical health psychology, specializing in sport and performance psychology. Dr. Jenny is a New York State licensed psychologist, a certified mental performance consultant with the Association for Applied Sport and Psychology, and a member of the USOC Olympic Registry, the highest distinction a sports psychologist can obtain in the United States. Dr. Jenny has been engaged in the art and science of human performance her entire life, beginning with her own athletic journey. A four-year All-American swimmer, she served as assistant coach at UCLA, swam on two national teams, and competed at the 1988 Olympic trials. After retiring from competition, Dr. Jenny shifted her focus to helping high-performance athletes in every sport go for their biggest wins. And athletes aren't the only people who rely on Dr. Jenny's high-performance expertise. As a keynote speaker and corporate trainer, she has prepared leaders around the world to thrive in high-pressure environments and drive their organizations to success when stakes are at their highest. Dr. Jenny's seamless blend of science, research, education, experience, and intuition creates a powerful experience and remarkable results for people who are ready to accept and activate her guidance. I always love having a chance to sit down with Dr. Jenny, and I hope you enjoy listening as much as I enjoyed speaking with her. Here we go. Okay, Dr. Jenny Susser, thank you for being on the pod.
Of course, of course.
And not only on the pod, but like in my kitchen.
I know. Isn't this great? Yeah. Like face to face, no one can tell. And we both look beautiful, by the way.
Yes, yeah. Quite. You wouldn't believe how glamorous we both look because we're just that type of people.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's so great to be able to do Zoom and, you know, talk to anybody. But, you know, we're practically neighbors. And so how nice it is to just be able to, come down the road.
Yeah, it's great to be here in person for sure.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, and now Remy's looking at me like he has to go out. Are you just looking for attention, buddy?
Mascot. We have a mascot tonight.
Okay, I think I'm going to let him stare at me and we'll see if it escalates to anything else. But he had his chance like 2 minutes ago. Can you take a couple minutes and just explain in your own words like what you do and who you help and how you help them?
Wow, a couple minutes. All right. Yeah, I can give you my elevator speech. It tends to be like a Empire State Building elevator speech, but I'm technically a clinical sports psychologist. So I'm licensed as a clinical psychologist, and I've done performance counseling, coaching, psychology all of my career. So performance is kind of my thing, my passion. When I got into horses, there were really two issues that riders have. One is performance and the other is fear. And I learned that pretty quickly. So in the equestrian world, that's where I traffic, you know, straddling those two worlds, which is kind of, I call it like the same ice cream shop, just different flavors. To me, performance is kind of across the board, whether, you know, you're writing an email, presenting to a board of directors, asking someone for a date, riding down center line, taking a clinic, anything you do where you expect a result. So my game is to help anyone who wants to get better. And I just say, if you want to get better, I want to help you. And I don't care what level you ride at or what your horse looks like or if there's shavings in his or her tail. None of that stuff. That's, you know, if you want to work on it, I'd like to help. So anything. I have a really big bag of tricks by now. I've been doing this for 30-ish years, right? Although we look beautiful and glamorous. So I draw on a lot of different things, a lot of different experiences, and a lot of different science.
Awesome.
How was that?
That's great, except now I'm thinking about ice cream. Anyway, I'll try to stay focused. All right, so do you listen to NPR, National Public Radio?
I have in the past, okay. Yeah.
They have a show called Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and it's like a weekly news quiz, and it's funny or whatever.
Yes. Yes, and, I'm familiar with it.
Okay. Yeah. So they have a segment on there called Not My Job. Oh. And it's where they bring in guest experts, people who have excelled in their field, and then they ask them about things that are the opposite of what they do.
Okay.
So you help people with high performance, and I want to talk to you about low performance.
I love it.
Okay. So
great setup, and, by the way.
And so we might end up, you know, using different language around high performance, low performance. And I just want to say my thoughts are not fully formed around this.
Great. Even better.
Yeah. Oh, good. Can make you look really good. And there's a really good chance that I am totally overthinking it because that's what I do with everything. So I thought about where I should start. And I thought, let me just start with me, because this is a personal kind of thing that's been going on in my brain. Hmm. So I'm going to get some coaching here, I hope.
Right on. Yeah.
If it gets too weird, you don't have to share it all on the podcast.
You're the one who has the edit capabilities.
Oh, that's
here.
Right. I can cut it out. So, I mean, it's not like I've been striving to go to the Olympics or anything. But the past...
Didn't you originally, though? I bet that was in there originally.
Oh, yeah. Well, because that's supposed to be your goal when you're a dressage trainer, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or rider. You know, that's what you're supposed to do. So I shifted away from that. But I'd say the last 30 years, I've been, you know, pushing, striving, creating, achieving, you know, and trying to be my best at it. And just interestingly, the past few years, I'm finding a different sort of feeling going on of like valuing contentment and good enough and, you know, this sort of vibe. And it's been really interesting observing myself and going, how do I feel about that? And what about being my best? How does that fit in? Well, actually, kind of, I feel like I am my best, but how could that be? Because I'm not really pushing myself anymore. So I was wondering if you had tips for how to highly perform at not highly performing, or
what a great question. Oh, that's fantastic. I think I get what you're asking. I think I get where you are. And so there, oh my goodness, lots of thoughts.
Okay.
Let's see if I can grab some immediately. One of them is that which you basically said was that we sort of fall into our culture's definition of high performance. And I get calls all the time from people who will say, I'd like to work with you one-on-one, but I'm a training level rider, or I'm a backyard rider, or I don't want to show, but I'd like to feel more confident. And I'm always like, I don't care what level your performance goals live at. Terrible grammar there, but you get the idea.
Get
right? And I think it's fascinating because as we, let's say, mature.
Glamorously.
Glamorously, yes. As we mature, our brains continue to, I think our brains get faster and better as our bodies get slower and maybe not worse, but not up to the type of high performance goals we have when we are younger and, you know, not of a certain age, shall we say. Because our brains know it. Our brains know what we can and can't do. And they try to make hints towards that as we age and change and gravity has greater impact on us. So I think that we often get wrapped up in someone else's idea of what high performance is or what a great goal is. And we're, our culture now, like sociologically, we're really, gosh, we really have our eye on the wrong ball. We are all about what it looks like, what it gets us, the money, the power, the prestige, the social media likes, whatever it is. We've sort of lost a bit of our connection to why we do stuff. And it's always interesting in the horse world because I'll talk to women who are like, I'd really like to just go and spend some time with my horse, you know? And I'm like, yeah, that's why you have a horse and not a tennis racket, because
they're nice to spend time with.
Right. Yeah. Cause that's what we're really after. Yeah. So I wouldn't even call it low performance. I would say that it's like maybe the next iteration of performance for you, mm-hmm. and whatever that looks like. Inside of that, I think that still setting goals, still having things to chase, still wanting to get better or bigger in certain places, yeah. that all could really fall under a low performance kind of ideology.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where I, you know, as I'm like trying to form the questions in the English language, I'm like, high and low performance isn't necessarily the way to describe it. But it's interesting how much it can feel like that. You know, there's the part of my brain who's telling me, you're giving up, you're quitting, you're too old, you're not, you know, you're not meeting these, you're not relevant, you're not, you know, all these horrible things.
So mean.
And there's, yeah, thank you, Miss Breen.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, what you said, like today with social media, we're not only comparing ourselves to each other in small areas of lives when we used to happen to like go to a sporting event and see somebody, but now we're seeing what they had for dinner and how happy their kids are, you know, so there's that. And then, you know, when we post our own social media, you know, you post the good stuff.
Yeah.
And so now we're comparing ourselves to our own social media.
Yeah.
And there's just these layers of, yeah, how are we measuring? And that's what I feel like. I feel like there's been a real shift in how I'm measuring.
That's a great way of talking about it, actually. Like, what are we measuring and how, and how are we measuring it? One of the things that I find in goal setting in general is I call them hard versus soft goals. Not sure if I would imagine we talked about that in our podcast earlier.
Number 24. Dr. Jenny Susser, goals and confidence.
and so the idea behind having hard and soft goals. So hard goals are the ones that are really easy to measure. I'd like to qualify for regional championships at third level in 2026. Really perfectly stated hard goal. You can really measure it. It's very objective. There's no subjectivity to it. Has nothing to do with how you feel. Has nothing to do with how the judge feels. It's you either do it or you don't. Da 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 da. Right? Hard goal. Soft goal would be, I want to qualify for regional championships at third level in 2026, while increasing my level of connection with my horse, doing it in harmony, having greater confidence, more ease, more fun, right? You include those soft feeling emotions mm-hmm. into the soft goals. And so the difference is that if all you set are hard goals, you'll never be satisfied. If all you set are soft goals, you'll never accomplish anything. So you put the two together and it kind of creates this really nice blend of a little yin and a little yang and gives you a little bit more of a robust definition of what it is you're mm-hmm. going after. And I think we have such hardness to our goal setting and our relationship to performance that we kind of forget about that, like really what it means and why we do this. And I actually think that sort of traces, or maybe is what is starting to seep in, like, well, I think as we gain wisdom, as we age, meaning changes. Mm-hmm. We have so much more experience and perspective and vision. And I think that that changes what we feel like we need for ourselves and more specifically to accomplish.
Yeah.
Oh, she's making a face.
Yeah. Like, well, there's a lot to think about, and I'm just keep, it's really connecting with, I mean, I've known this and done this all along, I think, of having those soft goals and knowing how I measure success, but it's, I'm finding myself in a, it's different. It's like a bigger shift.
And do you like it? Do you feel better?
I do.
Okay, good.
Except when the other part of my brain tells me what, you know, that I should be doing more, you know, that it shoulds. And, but I can't take a picture of this and post it. Like how, you know, sometimes I'll have these magical moments with my horses. And, you know, this is all about what I teach anyway.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is what I've been doing. Why can't I do it anymore? Because I'll have this magical, I had a magical day in the barn with my horses today. And at one point I took out my phone and I'm like, there's no way I can capture this.
Yeah.
And then no one's going to know. Mm-hmm. And then does that even matter? But, you know, I do run a business. You know, this right. dependent on people knowing about what I do. And I'm like, I can't explain it. Do I even care to explain it? I'm just going to enjoy the magic.
Yeah.
Which is so cool.
Yeah.
But then it feels very like, how do I high perform or run my business or, you know, continue to have, I'm going to put in air quotes, everybody, success or,
right.
you know, so it's this, and I think at this point in my life, it's interesting. It's an interesting place to be in.
Yeah.
And I'm doing therapy on my podcast.
Right. This is great.
But the thing is, and I'll just say like this, I see this totally relating to horses because any like, disharmony between what we're feeling in the moment and then what we think we should be feeling, like the horses pick up on that. And so many times I work with students who are just like you said, oh, I'm only at training level, or like they don't want to super achieve, but they feel like they should, or they feel like they're letting their horse down. Like, oh, my horse with a different rider, it could be upper level. And to help them be okay with not being, not taking that horse to the upper levels, because I don't think he's thinking that way. So I think there's a lot of facets to this being okay with, yeah, it's this contentment piece.
Yeah.
So, but still being your best, that paradox. Like, I still want to be my best at whatever I'm being.
Yeah.
Whatever that moment is, I can be the best at it, even if I'm not really doing anything except letting my horse lick my face.
Right?
Because it's so cute.
So cute.
And he could be out grazing, but he walked in the barn just to lick my face.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe you're about to become really a social media disruptor with how to talk about this. Because I actually think this is really important.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I have a hate relationship with social media.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really late to the game on any of it. I think I'm the last person that I knew that, like, even when Facebook was the only thing, I was the last person I knew to begrudgingly join. And it's funny because I don't really post anything about myself on social media because I just... I'm so hardcore Gen X, just, you know, like, and it's funny cause I friended a woman who was one of my swimmers when I coached at UCLA 34 years ago. And I went through and I looked at my feed and I'm like, she's going to think I'm nuts. There's not one picture of me. Right. There's like, I share some posts about horse psychology and some of the things that I like, or, you know, like, oh, political commentary here and there, not very much because yeah. I don't find that to be really useful, but mm-hmm. mostly like a social commentary or something, or a reflection, or, you know, and I'm like, she's going to wonder who the hell I am because my Facebook doesn't really tell anything. Mm-hmm. And I thought, do I care? And so I posted one picture of me and my niece, my great niece, and I only have 200 friends on Facebook, like really, like in my personal page. And every single person liked it. And I was like, okay, what does this mean? Mm-hmm. You know, does it mean people, what are we really trying to represent about ourselves? And so I don't know how many of your students follow your personal page, but you post the most surprising and eloquent, like artistic pictures, like of a leaf or a twig or a shadow or a pattern in your horse's hair after a bath. And they're always staggeringly beautiful.
Thank you.
And so thoughtful. And to me, those speak incredible volumes. You know, like those are like, I every time I see one of those, I kind of go outside and I'm like, how did I look at the ground and how did she see that? You know,
I'm so happy you brought this up. Someone, a student of mine just texted me and she said, thought of you. And it's a picture of like drops of gasoline on the pavement, but it like makes this beautiful rainbow. It looks like peacock feathers.
Right.
I have to say I've created a story and a talk around that. And it's, the book will be out early next year.
Wonderful.
So, but yeah, called Finding Beauty, because there's a whole story that goes along with that. Anyway, I'm so glad you picked up on that.
Well, it's great. And so I think part of my point is to say how wonderful it is. But the other part is that without more than five words, I mean, sometimes you put one word.
Yeah.
It really stirs something in me and moves something in my brain. So you don't always have to be representing some type of achievement or performance.
Gotcha.
To reach people.
Yeah. And there comes the other part of it, because you know, now I've really, it's so funny. I've really embraced it. I mean, it's just what I do, and it's, I can't not do it. And I love to share it. But then there's part of me like, well, where are the horses? Like, I'm Karen Rolfe, the horse person. And I don't post many horse things on my personal page.
No.
And, you know, then sometimes people are, oh, I've been told if I post something like social political, I've been told to stay in my lane. Like, I came to you for horses. I'm like, I'm a whole person. Anyway, but I think this is, it's definitely tied into the conversation that we started this topic, because, you know, this like, you're not doing enough. If I post something other than, you know, what's in my lane of my achievement, you know, through the horses, it's like, well, you're not achieving, but I want to take pretty pictures. That's not achieving anymore. And it's interesting much that, you know, I have the two voices in my head. One's like, you know, F it. This is what I love and I'm going to do it and it's me. And the other part's like, but I must achieve.
Knowing that I was a swimmer.
Yeah.
And if I think about a pool and lanes and no, really, like, so I was a sprint freestyler and this is the way lanes are actually organized on a swim team for practice. There's like a distance lane. So the distance swimmers are all in one or two lanes, depending on how many there are. Then it's typically by stroke. There's a butterfly lane, a backstroke lane, a breaststroke lane. And then over in lane eight are the sprint freestylers. Because we train.
You're splashing a
everybody
lot.
Everybody trains differently, you know? And, you know, we'll finish and the distance swimmers are still in the middle of their main set, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I always had to do all four strokes. I always had to do sets that were called IM, individual medley, which is all four strokes, right? We'd always do like, okay, we're going to do however many 200 IMs on such a right interval, whatever. We always had, you know, we're going to do whatever, 10,000 for time or whatever it was that I wanted to die. So I ended up in every lane, in almost every practice, for sure every week, but there was my specialty. But if I didn't do the 200 IMs, I didn't have the same type of fitness in my 50 freestyle. If I didn't do whatever 10 500s on whatever interval, I couldn't do four 100 freestylers, you know, on the last day of NC2As or whatever it was. Like, every lane contributed to my special lane.
Right.
So if we're going with that kind of metaphor, and I love it when people tell other people to stay in their lane. And I'm guilty of that as well. And I think that being reflective in another lane is really cool. Feeling like you own the entire pool, not so cool.
Mm.
That's sort of my take on it.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, the bottom line, like you said, to be well-rounded, we're not single definition.
But your view of art and the way that your brain thinks in those types of shapes and motions and relationships of objects to each other is a big part of why you are so successful and have achieved so much with horses.
I'll accept that.
Yeah, you should. Yeah. Right. I mean, there's
it's the seeing. Yeah. There's dynamics. There's interaction. There's for sure.
Well, so when we first met,
mm-hmm.
when we were a little more glamorous,
back on Long Island.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was right after you had started with Pirelli.
Yeah.
And you had done this video, I think, probably with Linda, and you had broken down, I can't remember what it was, like, either, I think it was probably like a Grand Prix level pirouette. You had broken it down. I can't remember exactly how it was.
It was with my horse Monty.
Yep.
And I just filmed that here. I think it was a video of him. I'm doing it Liberty around me.
Yeah.
And then I'm doing it bridleless and bareback, and then I'm doing it with the bridle. Yes. And I kept switching between,
and the pieces were, it was so illuminating to me watching, and then I was like, wow, the way her brain works is phenomenal, right? Because there aren't very many teachers who can actually dismantle something into explainable, teachable pieces, especially horse trainers. Most horse trainers were great riders or are great riders and struggle terrifically to be able to say, do this with your left leg, do this with your right leg. You know, like, I'm always like, what do I do with this? And I'll point to my hand, or what do I do with that? Or I'll point to my butt. You know, like, the people who have that intuitive riding sense and who don't have I would say there's probably a great number of them that mm-hmm. don't really have a passion for teaching. They teach to fund their passion.
Right.
And so watching you teach was really interesting and enlightening. And we had you come to the farm as a result.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was great. And so you probably early in your career had to be super achievement oriented to be able to get an audience. Now, if you were starting brand new, you would probably have to have those achievements. But now...
go ahead. Sorry.
Don't you want your audience and your students and your following to age with you and grow in this manner with you?
Well, here's something really interesting. So when you're talking about that, it brought me back to, like, what was I feeling then? And I wasn't thinking about achieving, actually.
Isn't that funny?
I was just doing what I love to do, and I couldn't help but share it. Like, that's just me. It's like, it comes in and I want to share it. Like, look at this, or this is how we did this, or whatever. Okay, your coaching session is working. The feeling of, oh my gosh, I need to strive to achieve is happening. Like, there's new directions I want to go, but I feel like, I created this thing. I have to now push it, and I have to get more. I have to do more ad spend. I have to do more. I have to live up to this, whatever. But where my passion and attention is going is evolved.
Somewhere else.
It's evolved. Yeah. So it's evolved with the horses. It's evolved into the, you know, the taking the pictures. It's evolved in a lot of different ways. That feels fun. But my mature, grown-up, responsible brain is saying, but you built this thing, and you've got to, now you've got to, like, get more likes and clicks and ad spend and, you know, get more. It has to support you. And like, that's never what I was thinking. I never had a business plan. I never meant this to even work out this way. So
it's a little ironic.
It's very ironic. And so now it's like I could see the logic of all the things that I should do and take another course on how to be the best entrepreneur I can and all those things that don't really sound like very much fun. And I've done a lot of that, where my heart is going. So it's just interesting at this age, why am I questioning where my heart is going? Where previously I just went with it and it worked.
Ooh, that's a really good
question. Because I didn't have anything else that I built. Now I have something that I built and it's changing. It was much easier to create out of nothing. Although I didn't really create
most
out
people
of nothing.
Would say the opposite.
I had a competitive dressage
career.
Career.
Right.
But
yeah, you rode Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Probably have a gold medal.
What? Yeah. So why didn't I? I didn't think too much about that. I'm like, bye.
Bye.
This is more fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I really think that so it's interesting because my level of aggressive desire to build has also changed over the last several years. And I'm 58, about to be 59. And I look at my career and my goals. And, you know, part of it is that I pushed so hard for so long. And some of it was incredibly wonderful and incredibly satisfying. And some of it was just crap, you know? and so I think as we have that ability to look back, like as we have more mileage in the rearview mirror, it helps inform what we're looking for as we go forward. And we don't need to do those things again, hopefully. Mm-hmm. You would think that with maturity and age and experience, there are things that you're like, okay, I don't need to do that again. There's also things that come off the table completely. You know, like I never made an Olympic team. And that was a significant part of my life for a significant portion of my life. Mm-hmm. Right. And not only has the ship sailed, but it's sunk and it's like, you know, a relic on the bottom of the ocean. And so I think we kind of, and I was never even close. Like I went to Olympic trials, but I wasn't going to make a team when I went, you know, like, so you look at those things.
You were closer to it than I ever was to swimming in the Olympics.
It's all relative. Thanks. Know. That makes me feel better. So but the interesting thing is that there are these things that we thought about, dreamt about, or even goals we chased that you just kind of have to settle are never going to happen. Like, you just kind of have to say, okay, that's a part of my identity going forward, is that this failure or this missed opportunity or this missed goal is part of who I am. And at some point it's going to serve me, or it already does serve me, or I just have a thing, you know, like I think a lot of people have that one that got away kind of love thing in their heart somewhere. And for me, it was definitely being an Olympic athlete. Mm-hmm. And there came a point where I was like, okay, it's always going to sting a little bit. To me, it's a little bit like a grief experience, you know, like, can you ever really think about Monty and not have just like a tiny little twinge? No.
You know,
like, I mean, Robley's barely gone a year, but I'm okay with that. I'm okay that I never made a team, an Olympic team. And I'm okay that every time I think about him, I get a little, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's the important part, you know? So what does all this rambling have to do with what we're talking about? I think that as we change or as the things inform us and we have like wider and deeper foundations, that it's okay to look in a different direction.
Yeah.
You're referring to it as low performance.
That tells you a lot that I'm even referring to it as that. Yeah. two things pop in my mind. One is this, what's it called? A sunk cost fallacy of like, if you've been doing something, then you have to complete it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I remember my mom, she'd be reading a book. I'm like, what are you reading? I don't know.
It's terrible.
It good? It's terrible.
But I have to finish it.
But I have to finish it. And that has caused me to hold on to things that I needed to let go a lot. And then back to horses, like I still will catch myself. Like when my horse Ovation, he's 20, going to turn 23. I feel like I'm just really figuring out how to ride him. Yeah. And he knows everything in the Grand Prix. And I'm like, man, Ovation, if you had a better rider, like you could have competed. You could have.
And he went, yeah, you suck. And that really would have mattered to me.
And then I stop and I'm like, do I really want to do that? Like, I don't want to go to show. There's a reason I stopped competing. I just don't, that's not how I want to spend my time in that kind of atmosphere. And I'm like, and Ovation doesn't care. I'm not letting him down. Not one bit.
No.
But it's interesting. You know, it's interesting observing the thoughts that are coming in my head. And I'm like, if I'm having these kind of thoughts, I know somebody else is.
Well, 100%.
Yeah.
And so first of all, I think that's where you can contribute beyond what you can even imagine. You know, I talk to women equestrians all day, every day, not all day, but a lot of the day, every day. And there's always a theme. There's always the essence of that theme to it, which is like, really, I think the ultimate question is what really matters.
Mm-hmm.
And there are things that matter on paper for certain, but then there's also the things that as we watch people in our lives transition out of our lives, mm-hmm. for good or bad reasons, or end of life, or, you know, as we get, like, once you get to a certain age, people start to leave their bodies,
mm-hmm.
and you have these conversations. Like, I was really blessed to be with my dad as he, like, for the last 5 years of his life,
mm-hmm.
and with him through hospice and death, and be able to have these amazing conversations with him about the things that mattered. Right. And it was never the money. It was never the bank account. It was never the awards. You know, it was the people.
Yeah.
Right. And we hear that all the time, but to experience that is really cool. And so for me, I look at it like, okay, where is the richness now? And that's what I've moved into chasing. And I feel like chasing that is really, really awesome. And I will say that I have to tip my hat to Linda Pirelli for putting me on that path with horses.
Mm.
You know, I don't think that I ever would have been highly competitive because I'm so competitive. I don't really have a governor switch on being competitive. and I really didn't want to spend that kind of energy anymore. So I chose not to be competitive in horses, which was mm-hmm. great. And I am grateful for that choice. But as I think about the things that I feel are worthy of chasing,
mm-hmm.
And most of them are to learn and know as much as I possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
And the thoughts, I know I'm rambling.
No, I'm with you.
I do want to mention about old thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And so the brain has this funny way of choosing what it's going to clench and hang on to. I don't think I've ever said it that way.
I totally relate to a clenching brain.
A clenching brain, right? I can coin that. I've never said that before, but I'm listening to you, and so the pairing of thought and emotion is what creates permanence,
mm-hmm.
whether positive or negative. And so clenching to me is a little negative. And so this thought of what you need to accomplish, to check whatever boxes you need to check, internal, external, marketing, personal, you know, whatever it is, parents, anything, whatever it is, whatever you're trying to achieve and accomplish, it always has an emotional counterpart. Mm-hmm. And so the weight of the emotion is going to sort of determine the strength of the clench. And so growing up how you did on Long Island and, you know,
in where you that, go to the mall and you talk it, about things.
Right.
Yeah.
And the training you received and the level of training you received and the level of expectation based on the training you received and the skill you had and how well, you know, and that could create some really deep permanence in those thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come back and we think they're real. And they're just thoughts that have a whole lot of emotion tacked onto them.
I totally get that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Does it create any relief?
Yeah. It's just one of those things.
If we're doing therapy, I mean, come on.
You just have to hear it again and again and again, you know? Yeah, it's who's talking? You know, that's what I'll ask myself. Who said that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you hear that. And it's the... And it's stuff I know, but it's like, wow, it's another layer of looking at it. Mm-hmm. Of like, I think what you said about what matters. It's a really good time for me right now. And for anybody who's experiencing clenchy brain. Yeah, like what really matters now.
Yeah.
And when you were talking about like the achieving, competing, and like what's important now, I just picture, for me, it feels like I've been like going somewhere and there, I feel like there's a still point and now I'm going like in the, I'm doing, everybody who can't see me, I'm going like gesturing in the vertical plane, right? Mm. So I've been going along this horizontal plane and now something about being in this moment, like what's the depth to it? What's the height to it? What's the, what did you say? Like the richness to it, the, you said something along that line. I think you said richness, right?
Yeah.
And that's what, just like, yeah, how much can be in this moment, which again, it feels like a stopping of achieving, but that's okay. If
it's,
I
just
choose to not
different kind
use
of
that as a way to, okay, yeah, it's a different, yeah.
Because are you fulfilled?
When
you do something,
when
making your vertical motion,
yes.
Like when you, when you do something on this vertical plane,
highly
fulfilled.
Yeah.
Right. And so how is that not high performance?
Mm.
I mean, I have worked with so many high performers over 30 years who hit the wall and win the medal and this and that. And then they're like,
no.
And
yeah, now what?
And what's next? And who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And did that really matter? And what purpose did that serve? And okay, so I made, you know, $100 million on this whatever developing and sale of this business, and so, you know, and that's where I think socioculturally, I think we're sort of having a reckoning.
Yeah.
And I think that we're all involved in it, right? And so I am a social scientist and I love to observe and I love to watch and I love to sort of collect this cultural data to look at trends. My older sister taught high school English for 25 years and has the most amazing brain. And she remembers everything. And she taught English literature and was like an expert in Shakespeare. And so her historical view is unrivaled because she knows, like, she knows the classics. And so she can trace through history, literature through history, explaining culture a little bit, right?
Interesting.
And reflection, right? And so she would talk about her 25 years of teaching and, you know, starting before social media and then watching what has happened and how we have evolved over the decades that she's been involved in that age of human being and how things have changed. And so it's hard to be in the pot of slowly boiling water and notice the temperature change.
Right.
And memory is, I always say memory is a strange bedfellow and highly unreliable. And so when you think back to who you were at 25, you can't really remember who you were at 25, and you can't really remember your thoughts. You have a suspicion of what you thought at 25, or maybe you have a journal or a dear diary and you go back and you can read it and you go, oh my gosh, how did I possibly say or think or believe that? Yeah. Right. So it's this odd, it's this odd time machine, memory and evolution and iterations, and comparing ourselves to who we were or who we thought we'd be by this time in our life. And I think that we have been culturally so focused on the external material aspect of things that I feel that we're maybe desperately,
yeah,
pulling ourselves into this different type of purpose, of meaning, of what really matters.
Hey, I just wanted to take a quick second to let you know that this podcast is brought to you by the Dressage Naturally Video Classroom. Yeah, that's my program. So if you love this podcast, you will really love the video classroom. It's where you can see me coaching students, narrating my rides on horses, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and so much more. So let's see all these words put into action. Check it out with a 1-week free trial, and then it's just $29 a month after that. So even if you only watch one video a month, it is totally worth it. So what are you waiting for? Go to dressagenaturally.net/classroom. Okay, now let's get back to the pod.
And perhaps you're a leader in that for women equestrian.
It's happening. It feels important. And like I'm, if I had like, what's my thing? Like I can see dynamics. I can feel dynamics. So this is what I'm observing, this change in my dynamic. And I'm like, and what I'm wanting to do, what I'm feeling and what I'm thinking. I'm like, this is new. And so it's cool, but I don't like the disharmony in it. So this is why I'm like, I'm second guessing myself, or I'm saying I shouldn't do this, or like that part of it, I don't like. So this is why I'm here talking. I'm like, I really want to keep going and get to the other side. When you were saying like as a social, you know, we're coming to this moment, I think the social media is amplifying all those self-criticisms and self-judgment and comparison to others. It's taken what we always have as humans and it has amplified it. So the good news of that is it's going to come to a head where we're either going to get lost or we're going to figure out a different way.
Or we're going to get found.
We're going to get found. And
not in the bad way, in the good way.
In a good way. Yeah. We're going to come home to ourselves instead of this. And I think that's the good part, because it's making me really look to myself.
Yeah,
I have to, because otherwise, you know, you're too busy worrying about what other people are going to think and how is this different than this. And I know I'm not the only one. And I've talked to other professionals of this age, and there's this common theme of this evolution, this transformation, but can I do it? Am I allowed to? How is my business going to thrive? Or I can't let people see that part of me. And so it's, again, it's this dynamic, and I see it myself. I'm like, I don't want to stay here. I want to get through to the other side where I'm really free and performing very highly at something else, or I don't know, but this is really helpful. And I feel like I needed to hear this from someone who's an expert in high performance. Yeah. It almost gives me a little permission, right? Because otherwise it'd be like, well, I'll go to the, you know, the Zen person. And of course they're going to be like do this. But I'll always have that thing in the back of my mind. Oh yeah, but the real achievers, they're off achieving things. So maybe I needed to talk to you. I'm just thinking of this now. Maybe I needed to talk to you about it because I'm like, all right, high performance person.
Well, and I think that it's really a powerful...
Not that we need permission, but apparently part of my brain does.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, it's... Permission is a funny thing. And social media, because your business has relied on it, you have to be very sensitive to that. And I think that makes us second guess and also make... maybe incorrect choices with which direction to go or how to go or what people really want. I think it's so hard to know what people really want. I think for two reasons. I think number one, people don't really know what they want. And then I also think that we kind of get distracted by the flash and by the quick, oh, this will do it. You know, like, everyone's looking for a magic pill, magic wand. That's why snake oil salesmen have existed since eternity, all across every time. And it's just like a quirk in the human psyche or brain. And I think that it really comes from like that deep sense of hope and belief that kind of is what makes us human.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, well, that
works. Now I have the answer.
Will that work for me?
Yeah.
You know, will I get to where I want to go? Because we think that there's somewhere to get. And I think that there are a lot of places to get to along the way. I also think that the interesting, like, so looking at you from, and watching your career, I've watched your career for however many years that I've known you, 20, it's got to be like 22
years. Yeah.
And you are much more of a pioneer than I think you give yourself credit for, because who has done what you have done?
I don't know. I mean, I know when I started it, I knew I was an oddball because nobody understood what I was, you know, I was speaking a different language, but again, I just did it because
it's what spoke to you.
It's what spoke to me and I had to share it. Yeah.
Right. And so what's different about this next level? You're leveling up or you're leveling sideways. You know, like we have both width and depth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think you need both. Yeah. I think a successful business needs both.
Yeah.
You know, like a successful business that just has width doesn't matter as much, right? I think it's the depth that brings the meaning. But if you only have depth, again, you don't have enough.
Yeah. And to bring it back to, you know, horses, I feel like at this point in my life with my horses and, you know, being physically, I'm already 60. Like there's some physical past the prime. There's some things I don't want to do. So there's all that. I'm the best I've ever been with my horses. I have the best relationship. And there's this magicalness that's happening that, you know, it's a dream. I mean, it's a total dream. And at the same time, I feel like it just feels really private. I'm like, how can I run a business when all this magic is just, it feels very, I don't know. Yeah. It's, I'm not wanting to scream it from the rooftops.
Yeah.
Cause I don't really, this is going to sound bad. I don't really care what anybody else thinks. I don't care if anybody else knows about it. And I'm like, well, that's really bad marketing strategy, you know? But so I don't know. I just want to really drop into that and, you know, I'm just trust everything's going to be fine.
So is it a conflict to have that piece for you privately and then have other stuff for everyone else?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And,
it's kind of ironic because I would imagine that the response to this is going to be people going, wait. I want the magic.
I know. And that's what I was thinking today. I'm like, okay, so today I told you I had a magical day in the barn. I don't know if I could ever do that with somebody else there, or even if there was a camera there, or if it would even capture it. I'm like, I should have set a camera up in the barn and see. It was ridiculous, but it was everything at the same time. I mean,
I get that. I totally get that.
And maybe I just have to wait a little longer, because then words to it will come. But it feels like a whole lot of nothing, but at the same time, it feels like absolutely everything. So, and I don't know what to do with that.
That's so amazing. That's great. Okay, so the science, in, the scientist in me,
okay,
the psychological scientist, is thinking about everything that we have learned and how we have grown, especially over the last, well, I would say it's just been the last several years in the horse world, but from a neuroscience, from a human neuroscience perspective, the last 15 years have been extraordinary. In that, we have really been able to advance into understanding on a much deeper level. And before AI was coming in and saying this is how the brain works, the science around what we've been discovering around the brain, and especially the relationship part of the brain, right? So we are deepening our understanding of how this, for lack of a cornier way to say it, this heart-to-heart relationship exists between beings, right? And so that is, again, why we have horses and not tennis rackets.
Right.
And I don't think I work with anybody who didn't come into horses because they just absolutely wanted that relationship with the horse. Either they read Black Beauty or... watch the Black Stallion or Billy and Blaze. Those gave me my childhood fantasies.
Billy and Blaze? I don't even know that one.
Oh, I'll have to look it up. They were C.W. Anderson, and they were, he pencil sketched all of the drawings in books. And they were these goofy little stories of this little boy riding off into the woods and saving things on his horse, on his pony Blaze. So we have this thing about relationship, and I think that we are quite bad at it as human beings. And I think that other sentient beings without the giant frontal lobe are quite good at it.
Mm-hmm.
If we watch how well herds, pods, flocks, groups, tribes, how other animals do the relationship thing, I think that's really what probably you're getting to.
This is so interesting, because for the first time I felt like I can't explain things, like I can't make it and you know, I've been asked to do demos and present, and my feeling, how I explain it, is like it would be like I'm a marriage counselor, so I'm going to go stand in the arena with my husband so you can see how well we relate. Like, I feel like to demonstrate with my horse right now, I'm like, I don't know what I would show you that's really important to me, because it's the relationship, and I don't have words. I can't demonstrate.
And that's the best. So the quest, so dynamic, so the person who breaks things down into pieces, it would maybe the reflection on your evolution of how you have grown in your own relationship to relationship.
So it's not just that I'm being a stupider teacher and I can't find words for it. Oh, this is freeing.
This is new territory.
That's so interesting.
You know, so, so for me, early in my career, I was obsessed with knowing everything. Like, I read everything. I mean, I know a lot.
You're pretty smart, seems to me.
And I've worked really, really hard to develop my brain in ways that didn't exist, you know, and I'm super proud of how hard I worked and everything that I know. But the thing that I think I'm the most proud of is my ability to integrate everything together.
Mm-hmm.
But it's there's no explanation. I couldn't think of it's inexplicable. Like you can't describe how to put things together. So I will have sometimes young psychologists reach out to me and ask me to mentor them. And I'm like, okay, you need to know everything. Well, no. How do you feel it? I'm like, you got to know it first.
Mm.
And there's so much that so to me, that is the essence of becoming wise, right?
Mm-hmm.
Julia Dreyfus has a great podcast called Wiser Than Me. And so she interviews women who she considers okay. wiser. I've only listened to a couple of episodes, yeah. But it's this, we have, I think in our culture, we've also lost this relationship to wisdom because we take our elderly and we put them mm-hmm. with a bunch of other elderly. And so they don't have this ability to influence or share for the most part with the majority of the population. So most people don't have the exposure to what true wisdom is.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you develop a relationship to finding your own mm-hmm. wisdom or how you would like to be wise? And I think that's what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
maybe without identifying it as such. But that is the piece. Like, you got to do all the work to get to that piece where mm-hmm. you can just be quiet with your horse, you know? And like, I have that magic with my horse Majestic. You know, I mean, he's 24 and gosh, we'll be coming 25 in March.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had him since he was 3. And he's been my horse for 15 years. And like, you know, if he spoke English, we'd finish each other's sentences. Yeah. And so, you know, like to be able to say something to a horse and have them actually reply to me is just always mm. magic. Always.
Yeah.
Like I went to put his sheet on for overnight and I was like, can I put your sheet on? And he looked at me. And he walked away.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I think old me would have been like, no, it's time for your sheet. And I was like, I'll come back.
Mm-hmm.
I came back 2 hours later and I stood there and I said, are we cool with the sheet now? And he came over and he put his head down and I put his sheet on.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
That's the stuff.
Yeah.
That's the stuff. Yeah. And I think when, you know, hearing you talk about this and thinking about the evolution, I think it makes perfect sense that I have to kind of be quiet for a minute and maybe not play the teacher role in the way that I used to.
Yeah.
Because I kind of need to shut up and let the wisdom develop and then maybe I'll have something to say about it later or not. But it's like, I've always gone from, I know I teach, I know I teach, I know I share, I know I share. And it's like I think that's one of my superpowers. I'm really good at explaining. But to let myself be a little quiet about it.
Well, because this is going to have a different expression.
Yeah. And it does not feel like low performance.
All right. My work here is done.
Boom. Where's the ice cream? You promised me ice cream.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go.
I feel like we did something here.
I was just going to say, I think we did it.
And Remy didn't have to go outside, so we're all good.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to listen to the still point, and thank you.
Yeah. I think for you, it'll become very obvious. At some point, it'll be, okay, this is the expression. And if you only ever keep it for you, there would still be no difference in the quality of how deeply that mattered.
I'm going to let that be the last thing. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Karen.
If this episode resonates with you, make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Training horses is a long game. The more you listen, the more pieces of the puzzle you'll have. To see all your learning resources, visit dressagenaturally.net. That's where you'll find free videos, online courses, my book. You can sign up for my Wednesday Wisdom email or even book a private consult. Most of all, remember, you got this. Never underestimate the possibility for things to improve in ways you cannot yet imagine. Till next time, love your horse, move in harmony, and enjoy the process.